to Cohen what we just learned about a Cohen getting married to a Grusha, to a Chalutza, to an Almana. The question is very simple. A lot of people have asked over the years why a Cohen Gadol would not even be allowed to marry an Almana. What is her problem? What did she do wrong? She didn't do anything wrong. And of course, in terms of a Kohen marrying a Grusha, part of the thing that even in the future, because a lot of that is based on the Machlokas, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, that Elim came Motzabada. Beis Shammai says that the only reason for divorce is Elim came Motzadava, and therefore it means when somebody divorces a man, it's because she was theoretically a Zona, and therefore that's the only grounds for divorce. And therefore, on some level, so you could say that that's why a Grusha wouldn't be allowed. But Beis Hillel uses that pasuk itself as a proof that he's right for the simple reason. Then why would it say Almana Grusha v'Chalala Zona? Why does it have to say the word Zona if it's a Grusha? Obviously, it doesn't mean a Zona. It could be something else. It's not a fault. But the question remains, why an Almana can't marry a Kohen Gadol? Why wouldn't he be allowed to marry an Almana? And Rabbi Nissen Alpert in Lamude Nisa makes an interesting point and says that the reason an Almana cannot marry a Kohen Gadol, because a Kohen Gadol's life will be so busy with the Beis HaMikdash that he will not be around much. His home life will be very minimal. And if she's been married before and has had a normal life, even with a Kohen, who only had to serve a limited amount of time in the year and could have a, relatively speaking, a normal life with some home life on some level, then she will be disappointed with a second husband who's never around. And therefore, it's not because of any tuma on her part or anything wrong that she did herself, but rather the fact that she just won't be happy in the marriage if she had a husband already. And she's always, you tend to compare, my first husband was home and he was around when I needed him, and if she's going to compare him with a previous husband, it will not be a happy marriage. Just an interesting sidelight into that. What I wanted to mention first, then, just obviously off the top of my head here, but I once mentioned to Rabbi Levine, the parasha starts off very interestingly. Eilat told us Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham olid etz Yitzchak. And the interesting part here is we've used the word in the Chumash a number of times when it uses the word toldos. But very interestingly enough, toldos, basically, if you spell it mole, in other words, if you spell it with a vav after the tof and a vav after the dalet, toldos, then that would be the normal way when we would write it. But the Chumash, interestingly enough, he mentions, again, the Limudei Nisan mentions an interesting point, that there's three times that he chooses to, even though it's not all the times, that's what I was thinking about last night, what there are other times in the Chumash, in the Chamisha Chumashi Torah, that he uses the word toldos other than the three times that he points out. And when it says it over here, Eilat toldos Yitzchak ben Avraham, the tuf is mole, it is a vav after the tuf, but there's no vav after the dalet. By the Eilat toldos Yishmael, in last week's parsha, there's no vav after the tuf or the dalet. By Eilat toldos Noach, there's a vav after the dalet, but not after the tuf. And what is the difference between them? What he chooses to point out is that when a father raises a child, so if he himself is a righteous person, he tries to have an effect, pass on his legacy, pass on the Torah mitzvos to his children, and have that kind of hashpah on his children that they should be more like him. In the case of Noach, obviously, Eilat toldos Noach, there was a disconnect. Right at the beginning, Noach was Noach Ish Tzaddik, yes. But what did he pass on to his children? Maybe to shame, he passed on the certain righteous qualities. But obviously, to Chum, there was a disconnect between Noach and one of his sons. And therefore, his beginning with his three sons started out well, but the end result was did not end well. By Yishmael, there's no... It's chaser on both ends of the story. Both ends, the tough and the dalet. Because he himself, certainly when he had children initially, he had no... He didn't send his kids to yeshiva, and he didn't care basically what happened in the end. In other words, they didn't end up in doing, his children didn't do tshuva and become anything. He had Avraham's upbringing, but there was a disconnect between Avraham and Yishmael, certainly. There was something wrong there, and the end result was also unfortunate. By Yitzchak, unfortunately, he had two children, and everything started out fine. So he learned from his father there was not a disconnect between him and his father, the beginning, but the end result was he had Yaakov and Esav as well. And while Yaakov followed in his footsteps totally and completely, but the reality was Esav was one of his children and there was a disconnect on that point. The last one of the toldos that is mentioned over here is Vayeshev Yaakov, Bi'eretz Megurei Aviv, Bi'eretz Kanaan, Eile, Toldos Yaakov, Yosef. Interesting pasuk that Chazal get into and say, Eile, Toldos Yaakov, Yosef. Basically, Yaakov put all his eggs in the basket of Yosef on a simple level. If you read the pasuk, Eile, Toldos Yaakov, he had 12 sons and a daughter, and Eile, Toldos Yaakov was Yosef. So in that phrase, in that usage of the word toldos, it's chaser at the beginning, but the end has the, after the dalet, there is a vav. That is to teach us that Eile Toldos Yaakov Yosef, at the beginning, while Yaakov tried to impart all his midos, the greatest of the avos that he turned out to be, certainly, the combination of Avraham and Yitzchak in the complete package, but nevertheless, it was only Yosef who carried on his tradition. And reality at the beginning of it, obviously there was the Mechiras Yosef and Vayoveh, you know, and it was a big problem. There was a disconnect with the other Shvatim because they obviously had the Maisa with Dinah, killing Shechem and doing all this mayhem in their lifetime. And there was a total disconnect. But in Parshas Vayechi or in Vayigash at the end, we see that when he came down to visit, and we say, you know, that he saw, you know, he said Shema Yisrael, and they said Baruch Shem, and he was very happy to see that all his children at the end of life, there was a, they were all tzaddikim in our eyes, that at the end of life, even though there was a disconnect early on, there was, it's spelled chaser on the tough, but on the dalet at the very end of his life, everything went all right, and he saw that the finish was good, and therefore it's mole at the end, which is where the Lamudei Nisan ends. What bothered me was I started to look up, racing in my mind, all the other places that it might use the word toldos. And what I immediately went to see if there's any place where the dalet and the tough and the dalet are mole. There is one time, if anybody could think of it right away, and I immediately had in mind, I'm thinking of the way it looks in the Torah when I was just laying in bed last night, and I'm thinking, and thank God I was right, but I surmised that in this one place it would be mole on both ends, and it's in Parshas Bereishis. When it said, Eile toldos hashamayim v'oretz behi baram. Where is there a mole at the beginning and the end? Biyom bara lakim adam al haaretz. When was there no disconnect between Hashem is perfect? Hashem makes no mistakes. So Eile toldos hashamayim v'aretz behi baram biyom. When was there no disconnect? Biyom asos elokim adam al haaretz.
Now I know I got sicker.
So this is where it comes into fruition. God created the world. It was perfect. Adam was created. There was no chet. There was nothing. Everything was exactly the way he wanted it. Asher bara lakim lasos, vayara lakim es kol asher osav, inei tov miod. Everything was perfect. The end result is, the good news is, in the end of days, while we have all these chatoim here, and we have all these trials and tribulations that we've been going through for the last few thousand years already, it's already a long time, or as the Abarbanel makes the point, when in the one of the Haftorahs in the Shivad in the Chemta says, B'shetzef ketzef, and he says, you know, that it's a short time, you know, when I look away, and he says, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, this is what you call a short time. I mean, he wrote this in the early 1500s, and he says, this is no short time. We're already past 1,000 years, and we're living in Golus over here. Give me a break. It's not so. And so he says, the reason over there is that God is just saying, B'shetzef ketzef, is that look what happens when I look away. The lesson is, look away, look at what happens when I look away for 1 minute. Not that things get so bad because you're doing anything wrong, but if you think I'm not watching at every second, Hinei lo yonim v'lo yishon shomer Yisrael, if you think I don't watch every minute, look what happens if I turn my face away for a split second, what seemingly is a split second, and I leave Klal Yisrael to their own devices and don't, are not mashgiach for even a moment. Look what happens. I turn my face away for 1 minute. I leave myself a little distance away from Klal Yisrael, and look at all the tragedies we have to endure. But at the end of days is, after the Dalit, it will be Mullah as well. At the beginning it was perfect, the end will also be perfect. When Mashiach comes, will be perfect. The next question becomes, in this Sefer over here, it's very interesting, Chidushei David, I don't remember his last name, I was just looking, I pulled it off the shelf here, and, what?
Hofstra.
Yeah, Hofstra. And I have a relative by that name, a cousin who married somebody with that last name. I wonder if I meant to ask him if he's a relative.
He's the one who will pay all of the Daf Yomi exams and the Mishnah Berurah exams, and all the Kaila.
Yeah.
So this he's Hofstra.
Yeah.
Hofstra.
But he makes a very interesting point, and I mentioned it this morning to somebody, and he says that what's very strange is, it says, "Vayehav Yaakov es Yitzchok kitzayid befiv, v'Rivka es of kitzayid befiv, v'Rivka ahavas es Yaakov." So we understand that, and the Mefarshim get into discussing kitzayid befiv. You know that he fooled him, that he fooled Yitzchok, and that's the way we interpret it on some level. Or kitzayid befiv, Chazal want to say, because he talked a good game, and kitzayid befiv, he trapped him with his words, he talked divrei Torah. And so to speak, he gave Yitzchak that impression. And it makes it sound that Yitzchak didn't know what was going on, certainly. And Rivka, she understood them both, and she saw the difference between Esav and Yaakov, and she favored Yaakov. The question is, what do we say what Avraham was when it says that Avraham passed away in last week's parsha at the end? It says that he, Avraham Asher Chai. In other words, what do we use the phraseology? The amount of years that he lived was 175. In other words, giving us the inference, that's how we realize from darshaning that pasuk, that Avraham lost, that wasn't the amount of time that he was destined initially to live. He was supposed to live 180, only lived 175. Why? As we all learned as children, so he shouldn't see that Yosef, his grandson, Yotzelet Harbisra, that he shouldn't experience that. So you mean to tell me that Avraham, he knew who Esav was, and Yitzchak would be fooled? How do you deal with something like that? So it's difficult to say that Yitzchak was totally fooled by it. What he gets on after a couple of pages of writing, but he basically says Yitzchak wasn't fooled, but he was hoping in some way, as we see later on, as some other Mefarshim claim later on, that while he understood, I just wanted to make another suggestion over here, based on what he says, is the usage of terminology. You could say that Esav was a Rasha, you could use the terminology, Vayetze, you know, that Esav, Ish Sodeh. What is the purpose of Ish Sodeh? What was the Tzayid Befiv? Because in last week's parsha, Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basodeh, what he liked over here was that what he saw in Esav was on some level that while Esav talked to him Torah on some level, but he realized that he was also an Ish Sadeh. He combined the Gashmius and the Ruchnius, and that would be a tremendous combination for the future. And while Yaakov was just Ishtam, he was a tzaddik, and he understood that, but to be a manik, to be the leader of Klal Yisrael, what he didn't understand was that Yaakov could grow into the position, so to speak, even though he wasn't an Ish Sadeh. But, you know, you learn from experience. And Yaakov, obviously, as we see, that he had to deal with his brother Esav, and he certainly had a Esrim Shana Beveisecha, I dealt with Lavan. And that's why what I like to claim all the time, when it says in Vayishlach, when it says, when Yaakov, you know, says, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim, and he says, Im Taryag, you know, es Lavon, im Lavon Garti, es Taryag Mitzel Shamarti, Rashi wants to say, what is he telling him? He's not telling him that he, who do you think I am? You think I'm this Ishtam? Guess what? I survived 20 years with Lavon. Lavon was no better than you. Lavon maybe wasn't as physically violent as you are, but he was certainly underhanded and more underhanded with you. Do you think he swallowed me up? Look at me. Vayhilo tzon, vavodim, ushvachos. I came out of 20 years with Lavan, this tremendous, sneaky person, and I came out of him, I bested even Lavan. Im Lavan garti, I lived with Lavan for 20 years. Not only did I survive, but I got the better of him. So if you're thinking on any rate that I am small potatoes, get that thought out of your mind. Which is what made me think, what leads somebody to thought process. When he says in that thing in Vayishlach, when he makes that point in the Pasuk, the Trump is very interesting. And there are some old Chumashim that I've seen, when it says, Kotonti mikol achsadim mikol emes, when Yaakov makes that statement, right? It's azlogeresh. There are some chumashim that have a revi. So what is the difference in the pshat? The difference in the pshat is, what was Yaakov thinking when he said kotonti? Some people say, kotonti, I am really very humbled by this whole thing. I don't deserve what you got me. The revi, kotonti, I'm really humble. Yaakov is saying, kotonti, you know, I'm very humble. I was thinking, you know, like, wow, I am the most humble person around. Kotonti mikolach sodim mikol emes. What was on Yaakov's mind when he made that statement? I have done everything that you have asked for me. I don't deserve to go down in flames now. I lived with Lavan for 20 years. Im Lavan garti v'echararata. I survived living and my father sent me away. I was Mekabel Kibud Av V'Aim. And the truth of the matter is, we like to say that Yaakov was punished for being away, but it was Yitzhak who sent him away. And what did Yitzhak really say that he... So what was he punished for? Only for the last 2 years. So why do we say that Yosef was away for 22 years? Because the reality is really on a different level, that not only did Yitzhak send him away, but it's not that he could have come home sooner, because what does the Parsha say at the end of this week's Parsha when he sends him away? I'll send for you when it's time to come back. When it's safe for you to come home, and I feel that Esav's anger towards you has subsided, and now you'll be able to return home in safety, we'll send a message. Did Yitzhak ever send a message? No. So he's languishing by Lavan because no one ever asked him to come back. The difference is, perhaps, according to somebody, that he languished on the way, those 2 years that he spent along the way, and we see that the truth of the matter is, because of those 2 years, possibly if he had left earlier, maybe Rachel would have made it back, and Binyamin wouldn't have grown up without a mother, perhaps the Maisadina wouldn't have happened. All these things happened on the way home in the last 2 years when he languished on the way. And that is what Yaakov had to answer for at the end. When God told him, gave him the message, it's time to go home. Now you've got everything, and he meandered on the way home. He took his time. And therefore, that's when he went through all these trials and tribulations of Mysedina and with Shechem and various other things that happened along the way. So that was my take on that. But the point is over here, then he gets into the point when we get to the part when it says, Vayivez Esav es habachora. Makes, again, a very interesting point. This coercion on some level. And is, you know, the way we look at things, it's very interesting the way we want to say that, you know, the Gemara gets into things when Bnei Yisrael were in the land of Israel, and at the end, by Churban, by the second, if somebody goes ahead, a guy comes along and says, I want to buy your property, and he's basically forcing you to sell. The question is the Mechira, and you go ahead, and you knuckle under, and you... Is it a real sale? If somebody else comes along and later on realizes that he has an opportunity to buy your field back from the Shegetz, and now he pays for it, does he have to return the land to you? It's one of the things that the Gemara gets into. I assume it's Baba Basra, but I don't remember for sure. But I know in Yevamos on some level it's discussed as well. But nevertheless, is the Mechira a good Mechira? Does he have to return the land to the person? I know it's his man. In other words, when that person coerced him, did he really steal the land? Or did the person, when he says, it's a sale, I'll make the sale, is it a sale? At this point, Esav comes back, Vayavo Esav min asodevu hu ayev, Vayomer haliteini no minu adom hu adom hazeh, minu adom hu adom hazeh. And was this... So it says that Bianochi Oyev Yogea. And Esav came back and he was running away. He was Pikuach Nefesh. At this point, he was out of breath. He was so tired that he couldn't. And he makes a point over here, the Lashon Halitei. He was so tired, on the verge of passing out and dying, that the Lashon is, he saw that he could take the food himself. But he was so weak that he had to say to Yaakov, Haliteini no minu adom hazeh, you have to feed me. I can't even eat on my own. You have to take the food, give it to me, serve me, at least on some level serve me. If you don't have to feed me, I could put it in my own mouth, but I need you to serve me because I can't even do that for myself. So he was at this point when Yaakov gives him the food to eat. So now at this point he says, if you'll sell me the Bechora, is this a good sale? Is this the Midah of Yaakov to take it? He understands that he has a very captive audience here, and Esav, he's abusing the, you know, he should, all right, it's his brother, he knows what he is, but nevertheless, under these conditions, to sell the Bechora, what is the point? Is this a good Mechira? Does it work? Does he have a right to say later, this wasn't Mechira, I've been coerced, I was dying here, and just because you fed me at this point in our lives, you use this as a leg up, a point to abuse the privilege and take me down, so to speak, and sell the Mechira, perhaps this wasn't a good sale. So the Torah says at the end, Vayochal Vayesht, Vayivez Esav Vesabachora. What does that mean? I understand. Vayochal Vayesht, Vayochal. So he was on the verge of passing out, and perhaps he was going to die from starvation and exhaustion, whatever it is, and he needed to eat. But what was the point of the Lechem and Nezid Adashim? So the Mefarshim, the Chazal, tell us that Avraham had just died. And because Avraham has just died, he was making a Sudas Avraham for Yitzchak, for his father. And he was cooking the lentils. And this is what he was doing. So he says, the difference is, Vayochal, Vayesht. It says in Chazal, tell us that wine was created for two purposes, for Nichum Avelim, and also it's a Yitain Schar L'Rishoyim, to give Schar for Rishoyim. They like to get drunk, they like to drink, and it makes them feel happy. There's two reasons that God invented alcohol, And these were the two things. Yaakov had the wine there for Nichum Avela. But Esav, now when he ate, he felt better. He didn't know yet what was going on. But Vayochel Vayesh, when he drank and he got his fill of wine, this wasn't to make him survive and revive himself because he was totally exhausted and on the verge of death. He drank it, the Litain Schar L'Rishoyim. And therefore, when it says Vayochel Vayesh, the Torah has to tell us Vayivez Esav Ez Habchora. Now is where Esav crosses the line and deserves his punishment and deserves what he gets. But of course, the problem is, as I know I've mentioned before, so we think still in all, a lot of people want to say that Esav was still the Bechor reality-wise, and when Yaakov stole the Bechor later on, and he got the Bracha, that was also, he shouldn't have done it. The problem becomes, so why, you know, the Goyim, obviously, they still claim that was one of their tainis, that Avraham, that Yaakov stole the Bechor. In reality, it still belonged to Esav. So that's where the Limudei Nisan gets in. And I know this I've mentioned before, but it was so sharp. When Moshe comes down in Parshas Shemos, and he finally says, what do I say to Klal Yisrael when he's haggling with B'nai, he's haggling with God to take the Shlichus or not, and he keeps saying, I don't want to do it. He says, so if I take it, what do I tell B'nai Yisrael? What do I say to them? What should I start off the conversation to grab them? And he says, you know what you say to them? Very strange phrase. B'nai B'chori Yisrael. What's that all about? Why make a statement of that? What does that mean? He says, it's very simple. We think, even B'nai Yisrael were thinking, what happened when we see at the end of this week's parsha, the end of Vayishlach, when it starts to say all the Esav who Edom, and it gives all the ancestors, all the people that Esav, his generations after him, how many Nesiim, and the wonderful life that he led, and when B'nai Yisrael were in Mitzrayim, they were living on top, they were on top of the world. Everything was going great for Esav. What happened to Klal Yisrael? They had one tzoras after another. Then they go into Gullus for 210 years. And now they're thinking, Yaakov stole the Bechorah. And therefore, they're on top of the world. We're suffering here. And basically everybody is saying, you see, this is what you get. You stole the Bechorah, you don't deserve it. He says, you tell them, you tell Klal Yisrael, B'ni Bechori, who was the Bechor? Who I don't care whether he stole the Bechor or whether he bought the Bechor or whether it's a good sale or not. In my eyes, the Bechor is Yaakov. The Bechor was Yaakov, which explains why the Gemara tries to answer at some point in time that really the Bechor is the one that comes out second, because the Tipa that creates the child, the first one in was the last one out. Obviously. And therefore, in reality, while Yaakov was born second, he really was the Bechor. But nevertheless, getting away from that, he says in his eyes, the Mechira was a good Mechira, whatever the reason is, but you tell them, I know you've been suffering, but this was all part of the plan. As the Bris Ben Absarim said, Yachrechen Yetzu Berchush Gadol, B'ni Bechori Yisrael. What's also a very interesting part of over here, what was I going to say? I put too long on that. Yeah, what bothered me all the time was when it says that Rivka, so now she favored Yaakov. So she knew, she went, you know, she had the Vayisro Tzu Habonim B'Kibba V'Tomerim Kein L'Mosea Nochi V'Telech Lidrosh Es Hashem. And she had to know whoever told her the machlokis about whether God came to her directly, or it was shame, or it was one in the Nevi'im, or she had the malach tell her, we're not sure exactly. Nevertheless, it was communicated to her, Shnei Goyim B'Vitnech. He makes a very interesting thing over here and says that what does it mean in the thing So if Yaakov is going to be on top, so to speak, Yaakov is the one that, so why didn't God do away with Esav initially? The point of Rav Yavot Soir is when somebody is on top and somebody deserves people to serve him and do things for him and be this gevir, he needs slaves. He needs somebody to serve him. So the point is that Yaakov and Esau will always exist from the beginning of time all the way till the end. There will always be an Esau because it's like you could be a rabbi in a shul, I could be a rav in a shul, but if I have no mispalalim, I have no shul. I'm not a rav in the shul. V'rav yavot soir is Esav, the message is Esav will always be there, but he will be there for you. He will be there to serve you. V'rav yavot soir. And that will be. But if that's the case, then why didn't Rivka just go ahead? What bothered me all the time is that Rivka should have at some point in time gone ahead and said to Yitzchak, listen, I went to the Navi, or I had a communication with God, whatever it is, and he told me that, you know, the deal is, whatever you're thinking, you're making a big mistake here. This is trouble. Because Yaakov will be V'rav Yavot Soir and Shnei Goyim B'Vidnech, and she should communicate the Nevuah. Why not? But what we learn Vayomer Hashem La, we see that many times when we read all the time in the Chumash that when God communicated with Moshe, it says Vayomer Hashem El Moshe Lemor, Vayedaber Hashem El Moshe Lemor. What does the word Lemor mean all the time? The word Lamar is there to tell us that God's communication with Moshe wasn't private. He said it over to him, and now Moshe's job was to communicate it, to disseminate God's message to Klal Yisrael. And this is how I want you to say it. These are the words I want you to use, or I'm giving you license, as in Parshas Devarim, to use your own way to express it. How I want you, maybe you know how they will understand it better. You have to communicate all my thoughts to, I'm giving you that job. Rivka could have gone over and told Yitzchak, listen. But Vayomer Hashem La is God is saying to you, sometimes, when not sometimes, but whenever God or you have a vision, I don't mean any of us here, but maybe sometimes on some level we like to think that we've had thoughts. But if God is speaking to somebody, to a Navi, and he doesn't say Lamar, as we see with Yirmiyah, Yecheskel, Yeshaya, God gave them a Nevuah to disseminate to Klal Yisrael. But Vayomer Hashem La, God told her, I'm not telling anybody else, and I don't give you license, I don't give you permission to communicate any of these thoughts with Yitzchak. Some people wanted to say in general that since Yitzchak was so much older than she was, that she felt on some level intimidated by Yitzchak, he being the great person that he was. But the reality was she was just so much younger than him and she had too much respect. Listen, I can't go against Yitzchak. But his Vayomer Hashem La, I would like to think, means that he told it to her. I'm not telling you, things will play out the way they're supposed to play out. And that's why I'm telling you, don't tell everybody else. Yitzchak will find out for himself. Which is why at the end of the parasha, after he steals the Bechora, when Yitzchak finds out that when Esav comes into the room and says, here I am, Ani Bechorcha Esav, I am your, you know, here it is, I came for my bracha, and he says, Bo achicha bir mimo, vayikach bir chosecha, it says, vayecharad yitzchok harado gedolo ad miyod. What was he afraid of? Esav would kill him? I don't think that was in his mind, that Esav would totally wipe him out, that Esav would do something to him. I think he understood that Esav wouldn't do that. So what was his fear? Yitzchok was, as opposed to his father Avraham, who was Kulo Chesed, Yitzchak was Din. Yitzchak understood everything. It was basically black and white in his world. everything, especially at his age, if he was blind, which is another thing that I always took a look when it says Vatichena Einov Meraos, by Avram it says that he couldn't see. By Yaakov it says that he couldn't see. V'yenei Yisrael kavdu mizoken lo yuchal liros. He couldn't see. But by Yitzhak it says Vatichena Einov Meraos. Why the difference in usage of the word? And that is very simple. Because he chose not to see. That is the implication. Vatichena Einov Meraos. He, it should said, he couldn't see. But it says, you know, I know what Esav is. He obviously knew what Esav was. Because when Esav comes in, barges in, and wants the bracha, and he knows that he's, when Yaakov comes in and he says, Gishonov Amushcha B'ni Esav Imlo, why would he do that? Because when Yaakov starts to talk like Yaakov speaks, when he mentions God's name, he invokes God's name, so we know that that's what the Chazal tell us, and that's what it means, very simple. So therefore, he knew the difference between Yaakov and Esav. The point is that he still was hoping that there was room, and he gets into over here in the Sefer, that perhaps Esav on some level, if he would like Esav, if he would treat him with more than he knew who Esav was, certainly, but if he would, you know, it says Velo Sachanifu, but if he would treat him like he's a tzaddik and think that maybe it would have a hashpah, maybe something would rub off on him, and the, you know, and he would change his ways, he would be misakein his, you know, he would do tshuva on some level, and perhaps he would be a better person. So he tried to be makar of him, as opposed to Avraham, who had, as I was thinking over here, which he doesn't say, what was the difference in Avraham? Why did Avraham have to die 5 years early? Because he didn't want to see Esav Yatzel L'Tav Yisrael. What did Avraham do for a large part of his early life when he discovered Hashem? He was Mekarev people, and he tried to bring people around to Yiddishkeit. Avraham had a lot of experience dealing with people and talking to them on a day-to-day basis and knowing who. There are times when I know, not to, you know, to make a, you know, to say that you understand people, but you get a sense when you're talking to people, after 5 minutes, you can tell where that person is up to. A few times when I've had an argument about with a person about where they ended up in life, looking back, and I said, I could see when I spoke to that person, the first 5 minutes I met him, the way he spoke to me and the questions he asked and what bothered him and what was on his mind, you could see it was a waste of time. There was nothing you could say to this person that was going to change any of his ways. And you could see that Avraham had all the experience of being Makarev people, and he understood very clearly, I'm bringing this person into the fold, I see I can work with him, and you spend time, you give koyach to this person, and you talk to them one-to-one. Sometimes you talk to a person and you say, all right, have a nice day. And you know you're not going anywhere because they're only there to try to, you know, to get you to change your mind. And I remember one story, unfortunately, where this person came to, there was a person, a Rav, in the shul I davened in years ago. And I was talking to him. I had a couple of questions in learning, and it had to do with in Sanhedrin, and I wanted him to explain a few things to me, and I knew that he was that kind of person that would be able to explain it the way, you know, he had a lot of experience in life. And he sat me down, and then he told me a couple of stories. And one story that he told me, he said that bothered him so much, was a man came to him after the war and said to him, I hear you're making a trip to Europe, and I hear tell that I have a sister who survived the war. I'm not sure, but I think maybe she did. And to please, I'll give you some sort of clue where to begin your search. And when you're going back to Poland, perhaps you could look her up. I hear that she's alive. I don't know, but please, if you could find her, I'd appreciate it and tell her that I'm alive. And maybe I could see my sister and I don't know where to find her. And so he gets to Poland, and he gets to Warsaw, and he's looking for her. And he gets a line on where this person is, and he calls her up. And they arrange a meeting. And the first meeting that they made an arrangement was, he gets to this hotel in the lobby, and he waits there for an hour, and she doesn't show up. And so, all right. So he calls her up the next day, and he says, you know, I waited for you, and you never showed. And he comes back. So she said, well, she didn't feel like coming, and she didn't know, whatever. And she says, maybe you want to come to this place, and you'll meet me over here. All right. So she gave him another address. When he gets into the taxi a couple of days later, and he goes to the address that she gave him, taxi pulls up in front of a convent. And he goes in, he sees where he is, obviously, and she was a nun. And the end result was he started to tell her all about that her brother is a frum Jew living in Flatbush, Brooklyn, and he would love to see you, and all this thing was, and she began to talk to him. And he said, after 10 minutes, I realized that not only was I wasting my time, but you know what disgusted me? She was trying to convert me to Catholicism.
Yeah.
She was trying to make me into a Shagetz. She had that little level, that her level of respect wasn't like, all right, listen, I've made my life and I'm not going to change. But she was trying to change me. You could get a sense when you're talking to people. He said, when the guy said, so what happened? He said, when I came home, so I said, what did you tell the person after that? Because that's where he sort of stopped the story. And I said, but what happened at the end? He said, when the guy came over and said, did you find my sister? He said, I had no luck. He says, I didn't have the heart to tell him that she was a nun living in the thing, and she tried to convert me to Catholicism. I thought it might kill him. He was an old man, and I thought this would destroy him totally, so I just said I couldn't find her. But the point is, Avraham had that sense. You're talking to somebody. So he knew. When he would talk to Esav, and Esav talked to him in Torah, he would say, what a phony you are. You could see somebody is asking me questions, and sometimes when I've given a discussion in some places where there's a lot of non-from people, and some people ask me questions, I see in shul. So you have, Baruch Hashem now, the people in the shul have changed, the younger generation moving into the area, and so the people are more yeshivish. But before, when I had people, I knew right away when I looking at the oilam, and I would be making them a speech, and I would say something that was a little bit too frum. I would see people, some of the men in the shul in the back would start to go, I knew it! Oh! And I would see it jumping out of their skin. And when we came down for Kiddush, they would attack me. And I, as I've mentioned many times, my favorite story was when we canceled a weekend in the 9 days because the hotel called me up and says, you know, your shul is making a bingo weekend in the 9 days and they're going to be there whooping it up. And I think it's probably not right. And so I said, you're right. And so they canceled the weekend. And the guy who was going to get the free accommodations because he ran bingo came over to me Friday night in shul and started screaming at me, what is the 9 days all about? And when I told him, it's in memory, Lezecha, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So when did this happen? I said 2,000 years ago. I know I've told it, but it just stays with me because I've repeated it 1,000 times. He said, get over it. Right. So there is no... So, you know, when you're talking to a person like that, what are the chances that you're going to make headway with that person? There's no talking to people like that. And it's over. So, I look at the faces in the shul, and I see whose faces there's a connection, and I see some people over the years who weren't from, and not that they became, you know, but at least it sunk in, and they're taking it, and they're thinking, they have a guilty conscience over their life, of what happened since, whether they lived here in America or they survived the war and went the other way, and it changed them. But certain people have a guilty conscience. I've had people take a look, and if they've come over to the house, I know one person who said to me, and my wife and I were a little bit stunned, because he was a man who in Europe really could learn. And after the war, he started to send his kids to yeshiva. He had three boys, but the end result was he got upset with the yeshiva, took them out, sent them to public school, and then the kids, of course, none of his children are the remotely from. One son has a little shaychus, but certainly none of the children. They have no shaychus with Yiddishkeit. And he was sitting in my house many years ago, because my kids were small, and all of a sudden, while we're sitting there at Shalosh Shudas, he had a realization, and he looked at me and said, "You know something? I watch your kids. They were sitting and learning Mishnayos quietly. They came, one of my sons came over and asked me a question on one of the Mishnayos that he was learning. He didn't understand it. I should explain it to him. And they were discussing amongst each other, a little learning here. One guy was being Mavasedra, one of the boys. And he says, and I see my grandchildren, when I come to visit one of my kids, they're running around like Vilde Chayes. And they're this and that. And he says, I look at the children, and I have charata that I sent my kids to public school, and I see the difference. And I said, at least he understands. He was a man already who was, he's since passed away, but he had a realization of the difference, and he has. But some people you talk to, and all they do is just get hot under the collar, and Yiddishkeit disturbs them, and there's nothing you could ever say that's going to make any difference to them in any way, shape, or form. And Avraham understood that when he spoke to people. Yitzchak had a different take on it. This was his son. Avraham could have a different take. Sometimes we see our children, we want them to carry on, we want them to accept our ways, if we push them hard enough. But when you're a grandparent, you look down and you look at things a little more objectively, and you see things and you watch people from a little bit from a distance and watch the way they act, you could see more readily where these kids are going. It's a grandchild, and it's your, you know, legacy that you're leaving behind. You see the children, but you see things a little more clearly. You have another objective opinion as different from a parent who wants so, pushes so hard, which is a very interesting thing. As I'm talking and thoughts come to my mind, there was, I read a Hakdama from on the Divrei Yoel from the Satmar Rebbe on Pirkei Avos, and one thing that resonated, it was in the Hakdama that said, be very careful. They know people that, you know, he comes along people and, you know, he has to see them, and they're very from. And unfortunately, they have some children that some are from and some are not from. And when he talks to them and he says, and they say, listen, I, what could I do? I mean, you know, you have to be lucky. I mean, sometimes you have a child who goes, you know, I couldn't do it with my kids, whatever it is. I couldn't push them too hard, and they went off to derech, whether or they're not as firm as I am. He said, be very careful, because your children are going to walk you the last mile of your life. And if you think you're going to be so particular about your Yiddishkeit and your frumkeit until the day al tam and biatzmacha ad yom moscha, if you think that you're going to be frum till the end, that can work only one way. If your kids are just as from as you are, because if they're not, and you have to move in with them, and you have to spend more time with them, they're going to take you to their side of the fence, because you won't have a choice anymore. So they're going to walk you the last mile. So if you want to really be particular, and you say, I can't deal with it anymore, I tried my best and I'm giving up, you never give up. Which is why I like to finish off with, by when it says, Vayar Yosef Lefrayim B'nei Shilei Shim, and it says, Gam B'nei Mochir B'Menashe, you'll do al birkei Yosef. This is part of a much longer speech, but you'll do what Berkei you'll say. What is, it's the same generational, but it says, Vayar Yosef Lefraim, B'nei Shileshim, very good, he had great grandchildren. When it says, Gam B'nei Mochir Ben Menashe, you'll do what Berkei Yosef, it's the same count of generations. It's the same amount of generations, Lefraim, B'nei Shileshim. So why does it delineate the people? Why does it name the people B'nei Ephraim? Because when you get to Pinchas and Matos Maseh, you see the difference of Benos Slavchot. It says, Avatikravna Benos Slavchot ben Chayfet ben Gilad ben Mochir ben Menashe leMishpachos Menashe ben Yosef. The Torah has no extra words. There's always words that seem to be throwaway words. They never are. There's no such thing. There's even every, not only does every word have to be accounted for because God wrote it, but every letter is accounted for, every nekuda is accounted for. And there are different divrei Torahs on that too. Even the letters itself and the nekudos, no extra nekudos that were changed. Because why that? When Shevet Reuven and God and Chatzi Shevet Menashe decided to stay Evra Yarden. Okay. There was a disconnect on some level with Avas Eretz Yisrael. But half of Shevet Menashe, Gam B'nei Mochir Ben Menashe, you'll do al Berkei Yosef. Why does it say, Gam B'nei Mochir Ben Menashe, you'll do al Berkei Yosef? Because Vatikravna Benos Lovchot Ben Chayfe Ben Gilad Ben Mochir Ben Menashe L'mishpechos Menashe Ben Yosef. To that half of the mishpacha from Benos Salofka that came from Mochir, you'll do al Berkei Yosef. Yosef taught them, gave them when they were children, obviously who he said to them, I need you to carry my bones for as long as it takes, and don't come back later. You know, we'll get to Eretz Yisrael, because some of the Mepharshim say, why did he say immediately take me out then? Because the truth of the matter is, they could say, we'll bury you in Eretz Yisrael. But first, listen, we're going to go on a trek in the Midbar, we're going to come back in a few weeks, and we'll take you then. He said, you take me when you leave, at the moment you leave Mitzrayim. When it's Vayhi B'Shalach Paro Esom, I need you to take me at that moment. I don't want to stay in Mitzrayim one second longer. That was passed on to his children, the Avas Eretz Yisrael. And half of Shevet Menashe decided to stay Evra Yarden, but not B'nei Mochir Ben Menashe. Because you'll do al Berkei Yosef, who said, I want to leave Mitzrayim the very first second that I have the ability. And that's where I think right now. I mean, I could probably go on, but I'm talking off the top of my head over here, and that's what I'll like to end with. Okay.
Yes, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You're gonna save.
Well, there is mincha, but not here.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you.